We need to figure out a way to come in each time, right? You know, like a catchy catchphrase or some shit to say coming in.
We gotta come in with our YouTube content creator voices. What's up, guys?
How was it? Yeah. How about welcome back, friends?
That ain't really either of us, but you're the interview guy. I'm just an awkward coach. I talk in front of people for a living, though, so I got no excuse.
There you go. Little change of pace this time, Tom. Just you and me. No guests this time. Getting to know each other a little bit better and letting the people in a little bit. The people.
Gonna ask each other some questions, both for us and for the audience to learn a little more.
But more so for us. Fuck you guys. Yeah, also, seems to be something that's pretty popular that I wanted to play for you. The other day on Rogan, he had this guy on and he was talking about this gentleman named Paul Harvey, who in 1965 had this crazy broadcast where he explained exactly what is going on in the world. And yeah, I wanted to get Tom's thoughts on it, so we're going to play that for you guys. It's called If I Were the Devil. It's by Paul Harvey. Again, you could just YouTube it if you do want to hear it after this, but I'll link the video as well in the show notes. You can cough. It's all right. I can edit anything here. So we are smoking marijuana.
Concentrate, technically.
Technicalities. So what should we do? Should we ask some questions or should we play the audio first that I wanted you to hear?
Go ahead, run it.
Okay, so here we are, If I Were the Devil, Paul Harvey. Again, before we've talked about the Yuri Bezmenov, the KGB guy who in 1984 laid out his how the KGB would destroy the United States, like a systematic approach, how it would take, you know, two or three generations, and you and I both agree that that's like fucking crazy, right on, super impressive, probably what has happened and is happening.
Literally.
And this, to me, this takes it kind of even a level above that. So here you go.
If I were the devil. If I were the devil. If I were the prince of darkness, I'd want to engulf the whole world in darkness. And I'd have a third of its real estate and four-fifths of its population, but I wouldn't be happy until I had seized the ripest apple on the tree. Thee. So I'd set about however necessary to take over the United States. I'd subvert the churches first. I'd begin with a campaign of whispers. With the wisdom of a serpent, I would whisper to you as I whispered to Eve. Do as you please. To the young, I would whisper that the Bible is a myth. I would convince them that man created God instead of the other way around. I would confide that what's bad is good and what's good is square. And the old I would teach to pray after me, our Father, which art in Washington. And then I'd get organized. I'd educate authors in how to make lurid literature exciting so that anything else would appear dull and uninteresting. I'd threaten TV with dirtier movies, and vice versa. I'd peddle narcotics to whom I could. I'd sell alcohol to ladies and gentlemen of distinction. I'd tranquilize the rest with pills. If I were the devil, I'd soon have families at war with themselves, churches at war with themselves, and nations at war with themselves, until each in its turn was consumed. And with promises of higher ratings, I'd have mesmerizing media fanning the flames. If I were the devil, I would encourage schools to refine young intellects, but neglect to discipline emotions. Just let those run wild. Until before you knew it, you'd have to have drug-sniffing dogs and metal detectors at every schoolhouse door. Within a decade, I'd have prisons overflowing. I'd have judges promoting pornography. Soon I could evict God from the courthouse, then from the schoolhouse, and then from the houses of Congress. And in his own churches, I would substitute psychology for religion and deify science. I would lure priests and pastors into misusing boys and girls and church money. If I were the devil, I'd make the symbol of Easter an egg and the symbol of Christmas a bottle. If I were the devil, I'd take from those who have and give to those who want it until I had killed the incentive of the ambitious. And what'll you bet? I couldn't get whole states to promote gambling as the way to get rich. I would caution against extremes in hard work, in patriotism, in moral conduct. I would convince the young that marriage is old-fashioned, that swinging is more fun, that what you see on TV is the way to be. And thus I could undress you in public, and I could lure you into bed with diseases for which there is no cure. In other words, if I were the devil, I'd just keep right on doing what he's doing.
So, yeah, there's that.
That is, what year?
1965. That's Paul Harvey. And, of course, they went on to ruin his career and his life.
And, it makes me think, if it was that bad back then, what it looks like now compared to someone who was suspicious back then, and also think, there's been people in every generation, most likely, that have, you know, been aware of the manipulation or the plot, if you will, and I guess they say the greatest trick the devil ever pulled was convincing the world he didn't exist, and at times I've fallen for that, you know, and
I think we
all come to realize there is a battle going on, and good and evil, and that playbook that guy laid out right there is well at work.
Yeah, and the thing is, I don't think it was bad back then. Back then, things were pretty good. Maybe they thought differently in the time, but looking back on shit, it wasn't like he was making easy predictions on, like, hey, like, all these things are the safe way. No, like, drug-sniffing dogs in every school? That's so commonplace. That's normal to you, right? Like, oh, there's drug sniffing. Yeah, there's metal detectors. Of course. Like, what do you mean? There's a school that didn't have metal. Like, what? Like, yeah, if you think about it, 1965 isn't that long ago. Like, it's long ago, but it's not that long ago.
No.
It really isn't.
It's still within living generations right now, and that just shows it's really accelerated, and it's accelerating more and more lately. I think, obviously, there's, with the age of information, there's more people who are quote-unquote awake or, you know, can see a bit more of the manipulation, or they have a little bit more mistrust for the government or authority or what have you. There's a little bit of a overplay by the powers that be or the global elite lately, getting a little too obvious with their plans. So is nowadays the time where there's probably more awake people than not? And that leads into some of the questions I wanted to ask you and talk about, because you're a little older than me. You can remember, and it's not like I don't remember too, but like, you were a little older and more mature during those times. Yeah, exactly. And what do you think was some of the first things that was making people wake up, or like original conspiracies for yourself?
Well, for myself, I've always been like super interested in like anything paranormal, mystical, unknown. Especially, like, I've always had a special place in my heart for like anything aliens, UFOs, and ghosts. Like, that was my original jams, you know. And I'm 43, and I remember being in seventh grade, which was 1993. I just watched a television show on the Loch Ness Monster, and I wanted to learn more. The only thing I could do was look in an encyclopedia and read a little paragraph, and that was it. You know, there was computers, but the internet wasn't really a thing at all. You know, we're still at least, like, we're still about 10 years out from that, you know? So, yeah, I mean, that's all I had. And I also remember right around that time watching Unsolved Mysteries, the original one with Robert Stack, you know, as the host. I remember watching it with my mom. She was always into, you know, crazy shit like that, too. So watching that growing up, and then the Alien Autopsy when they did that, I remember watching that live. And so I've always had, like, a fancy for it. And I think the thing that I think maybe got a lot of people at least questioning things, I wasn't going to say Roswell, but I think that was, I don't think that really got the world questioning, or, you know, even the whole country for that matter, but definitely a local area. Sadly, dude, I think the thing that woke most people up was the pandemic. I really do. I mean, there's other things, but not to such a magnitude, I think. What about you? Both parts to the question.
Yeah, for sure. About, I would think that right now, most people are, there's more people, you know, open to these type of ideas now that, you know, we've been lied to, or certain things were fake or manipulated, you know, whatever type of conspiracy route you want to take it. Right now is probably the time where it's the most prevalent, and 9/11 probably woke up a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
Me personally, as a kid, I'll tell you my fun anecdote of where I think made it, even though I've always kind of had a rebellious streak, and teachers and authority and stuff kind of always made me mad. But as a kid, big pro wrestling fan.
Oh, yeah.
Specifically WCW and Goldberg. I was obsessed with Goldberg when I was a little toddler. And
who's next?
Who's next, Goldberg? Yes, I was. I had the VHS tape for sure, called "Who's Next." But my Goldberg fandom led to me begging my parents to order the WCW pay per view. They did. They agreed, and like we were watching it. I remember I was just trying to stay up as a little kid. Those pay per views would last a while, and mm-hmm. those cards were long, and it was full of matches. Just the anticipation wore me out, and I remember being a little kid falling asleep and missing the main event, Goldberg versus Kevin Nash match, when Goldberg was still undefeated and it was a big deal. And I remember falling asleep and waking up and being so mad too. Like, there was no TiVo, no rewind or anything back then. And like, I asked my dad when he was having his coffee and paper in the morning, like, so what happened? Like, I missed it. I can't believe I missed it. Mm-hmm. And I thought he was trolling me, and he said, oh, Scott Hall, who was the bad guy at the time. Again, my dad liked Scott Hall, and I was a Goldberg fan, so I thought for sure this is why he was fucking with me. And he's like, oh, Scott Hall came out and, like, knocked out or distracted the ref, and then he hit Goldberg with the stun gun and pulled Kevin Nash on top of him and made the ref count. And I was like, no, he didn't. No, that didn't. That's not real. Because when you're little, you think wrestling is real, too. I had no idea that it was fake or staged or anything like that. So I'm like, no. And then I realized my dad wasn't messing with me, and that's actually what happened. I was like, that's bullshit. How could they let this happen? Like, there's no way the WCW shouldn't count. Like, they should revoke that. Like, that's no. Like, so that was immediate skeptic of fixing and authority and, you know, that's just a healthy mistrust. So that was really one. But other than that, 9/11 probably, and just realizing that a lot of things are not what they're made out to be.
Dude, Scott Hall, so quick story. I smoke weed with him.
No.
Yeah, so, okay. I got a picture with him, too, bro. Like, of us in a parking lot. Just, okay, so, okay. When I was living in Lombard, in the apartment, when we first met, I was living there. And one of the guys that lived in the Hightower building, I think his name was Dave. I was a friend of his. Like, we met, we hung out, we smoked weed, you know. He was a cool guy. And, he had some connections. Scott Hall was in town with a few other guys, a few other old wrestlers for, they were making like a special appearance, okay? This was probably in like 2014-ish, okay? They were here for like a
meet and greet thing or something.
Or like an independent type guy. Gotcha. And this was after the show, you know, he has a handler. So the handler was Dave, this guy, my friend's friend. There was a sushi place right on Butterfield Road in Downers Grove that they called and had them stay open late. I don't even eat sushi, dude. I hate sushi. Can't stand the smell of it. But he's like, dude called me. And he's like, hey, do you want to go get sushi with Scott? I'm like, fuck yes. So we hung out. And it had to be pre-2014 because I was using it at the time. I was still using heroin. Because I was fucked up, bro. I was faded at the table. And Scott Hall said, I want what he's on. And his hitter was like, no. But we did end up smoking weed together. And I got a picture of him, too. But yeah, I will definitely show it to you, bro.
Oh, man.
Yeah, it was cool. Like, I wish I could say, like, I knew him and hung out with him. Not true. But I did at least get to, like, spend that 30 minutes at the sushi place with him. So, yeah.
That Scott Hall, that's sick.
Yeah, he was the fucking man, dude.
Absolutely. Got any questions on your end? Because I've got a couple.
Oh, yeah. A bunch of them, dude. So, if you can meet anybody to have ever lived, who would it be?
I'm going to go the Great Gamma, who is a wrestler from India in the late 1800s/early 1900s. I might be getting the time wrong. Something vintage Indian wrestler whose career was spanned across like 50 years. He never lost. He was one of the most like legendary and feared wrestlers of his time, and had an insane workout routine and definitely inspired me and my training a lot. And I would have loved to see what it was like to be around that guy, see what he did in a day. He was notorious for just his insane workouts and thousands of reps. And yeah, he's a legend. That's someone I would like to see what they were like for a day.
That's awesome.
And you?
Probably Socrates, the philosopher. I just love the way he would make people that were quote unquote experts, you know, politicians, lawyers, soothsayers, all these people, he would just tongue twist them just by asking simple questions. Why? Well, why? Well, why is that? Oh, really? Okay, well, explain that to me. And then he'd get to a point where these people were just fucking... They killed him. So, yeah. Probably him. But not when he was in jail, but actually when he was walking the streets of Athens.
Definitely love the philosophers of old, and I have my theories that those guys were all just druids, too, and there was a cover-up. We'll definitely get into that as I specialize and love to obsess about everything Celtic and druidic and related to that, but those... The bearded wise men who were, you know, skilled in all arts and astrology and stuff like that. And like, I have a soft spot for Plato.
Mm-hmm.
Plato was a wrestler big time. And one of the only teachers I ever liked in my life nicknamed me Plato because I was a wrestler. And I guess that was his ring name, his wrestling name. And he was known to just like flex during his debates and stuff like that. So all those guys would have been a trip to be around.
Mm-hmm. Plato was a student of Socrates.
I knew they were related somehow, but I just didn't know the exact lineage of who was whose student. But I got one. Who's your favorite fictional character?
Fiction is fake.
Yeah.
Okay. Favorite fake character.
Video game, movie, mythology.
Let's see, when we open it up. Okay, you know what? I'm going to change this shit up. My favorite character from a movie. I'm going to go...
Doesn't have to be a movie. It could be anything. Right, fictional universe.
I'm going to say, okay, my favorite movie is True Romance. Sounds kind of gay on the surface, I know, or soft, but it's actually Quentin Tarantino wrote the screenplay, and he sold that screenplay, and that's what financed Reservoir Dogs and got him rolling. So, great movie. Every actor under the sun is in it. Patricia Arquette, Christian Slater, Christopher Walken, James Gandolfini, Brad Pitt, Samuel L. Jackson, Chris Penn. There's so many. It's a great movie. There's a character that Brad Pitt plays in there named Floyd. And he offers James Gandolfini, who's a hitman, looking for these people. He knocks on the door, and Floyd's just a bum that like lives on the couch, and he's smoking a Honey Bear bong that he made, and he's just like... he's like, hey man, want to come in and smoke a bong? And the guy like cocks a gun and he's like, oh, okay man. It's just, he's a cool guy. I think he's one of my favorite dudes. Or Kratos.
Kratos is a brutal choice and much more close to the character that I would go with. And I'm going to have to go with Vegeta from Dragon Ball Z. That character shaped me as a youngling for sure. And he's just badass. Definitely my favorite fictional character. I would be tempted to say Cucullin of Irish mythology, but I'm not sure if he existed or if he was a mythological thing or if he was part Nephilim or whatever he was. So that's why I'm going to go with Vegeta.
That's kind of where Ragnar from the Vikings is with me. He's supposed to be real, you know, based on a real guy, but who knows how much of it was real, but he's another guy that was pretty cool. So if you could witness any one mystery or thing, like you could witness JFK getting killed, see who really did it, you could see if we did the moon landing, you know, if you could go back and see any one thing, just be present for it, you know, the pyramids being built, what would it be?
Probably some sort of global cataclysm, whether it was...
The Tunisia event?
Of anything, like the fucking biblical flood, the Tartaria mud flood, that maybe there was some type of a... You know, high advanced society, almost like, or like the sinking of Atlantis, things like that. The supposed die off of the dinosaurs, if we subscribe to that. But there's evidence, at least with if you're familiar with Tartaria and anything related to that, it's basically like a lost civilization.
I like Tartaria sauce.
Yeah, in a more recent time, that there was a cataclysm, maybe like within the last couple hundred years. And there's buildings that are partially submerged around the world, and they think that maybe the architecture around the world was used to, like, harness energy from the atmosphere, and maybe there was some sort of, like, a fucking power surge or a polar shift or, a solar flare, some sort of, like, they fried the grid. It looks like there's, like, electric scarring on the earth in certain places that form, like, rivers and stuff and veins.
This shit's crazy.
I would like to have seen... some sort of a big cataclysmic event, see how it really went down.
Mm. Eddie Bravo is super into Tartaria at the moment. Well, for the last, you know, few months, he's been super into
it. We should try to get him on here.
Oh, yeah, dude. Fucking come on now. Yeah. Eddie Bravo, that'd be legendary. Maybe you guys could train together, too. What if you tapped Eddie Bravo, dude?
I would love to roll with him. I am technically under the 10th planet lineage.
Are you really?
I'm kind of a nomad, like I've always been. But the only time I've gotten belted is through 10th Planet.
Hmm.
Yeah, I have a brown belt. I don't give a shit about belts if anyone's familiar with me and my thing. I've been tapping black belts in tournaments since literally 2017, 2016. So as far as I'm concerned, I've been a black belt since then. I just haven't really belonged to a jiu-jitsu school long enough to...
Paid enough money.
Yeah, actually, I haven't paid for training in over a decade.
You know what? That's what they should really ask, dude. It's not like, you know, what belt are you? How long have you been... What you should really ask is, how long have you not been paying for training? Because that really determines, like, when you hit an elite level. Not necessarily, I guess, because, you know, they offer, like, blue belts some training. So I guess we can modify that question in a way. But that, I think that you're onto something with that. Because if you're good enough to where you don't have to pay, and you're good enough to teach, that fucking says something.
Yeah, I think if there's any aspiring martial artists, grapplers, wrestlers, whatever, like, yeah, it can get expensive trying to do that hobby. And you got to take opportunities that you can get. Like me personally, I think I had a strong wrestling background, and like I fell into a group with MMA fighters, and like obviously wrestling's a valuable skill there. And you just try to be a good person, good training partner, like offer to help out how you can. Yeah, if you have a skill that you can teach or help with, if you're, you know, a good student, you're helpful, you clean the mats, you do whatever. It goes like in any sort of, you know, transaction or relationship, like you have to bring some value. I don't know, bring some fucking water, bring some Gatorade, be willing to learn, bring good vibes, be funny. Like, you bring something positive and like you bring value to the situation, or in this case the training or whatever, then yeah, you bring a value of your own, and it's more of an exchange. Then you're not just freeloading, like demanding training. And like, I don't show up to places like, oh, I'm not paying, I'm too good to pay. Like, it's just kind of how it ended up happening.
You don't want to be the guy that fucking got to do a big old circle jerk at the end of the night to pay for your training, you know?
Of course not.
Well, that guy's fucked up, dude.
Yeah, the martial arts community has a lot of guys like me too. They just like to train. They want to roll. They want to go around and, you know, just train, cross train, go to different places. And it gets very culty in the martial arts and jiu-jitsu world sometimes.
Like, that's weird.
It's there's a lot of people that aren't about that bullshit, and they just want to train, want to bounce around open mats, and they've been grappling long enough to where like they don't need to sit through an entire long technique class. They almost use like the lower skilled people as their drilling partners after a while. And I don't know, I just never belonged to a home gym like that.
Besides wrestling and conspiracies and, you know, things like that, what's your next biggest passion?
If I was going to take my life in another route too, which I almost did at times, would be getting involved with reptiles and amphibians. And I love reptiles, love amphibians, frogs. I've always kept pets ever since I was little. I love going out and finding them. I have a book that is, it has every reptile or amphibian that occurs in Illinois, and I've found quite a bit of them. I used to love going out and doing that. Never liked school, never wanted to like go to school to get the degree, a useless degree that probably won't get me a job. But especially when I would deal with like injuries, or like I had some eye injuries in my past, and I would almost like spazzily spur of the moment, manic, distract from, oh fuck, my eyes are fucked up, like I can't fight, I can't do whatever, like, all right, buy a lizard, gonna buy a reptile. Or like when I was really considering like if I was gonna be going down that path, because I was way more like dead set on becoming a like UFC fighter, UFC champion, but for a while I couldn't do any striking because of my eyes, and it derailed me for a long time. And I was so bought into this idea that I was never gonna fight again, and I was like, fuck grappling, I already wrestled since I was a kid, like I don't care anymore. I want to fucking throw down. I want to punch people. Like, so if I can't do it, if I can't fight, I want nothing to do with it. Like, fuck it. My dream was crushed. You know, like that. I was very depressed about that for a while. Even before I had my first fight, my eyes were just fucking with me for a long time. But around that time when I was going to give it up, I was going to take that route. I was going to, I don't know, I'll be some sort of like biologist. I'll go study turtles or some shit. I'll go like monitor the local amphibians in the woodlands and take surveys and whatever, or just like work in conservation. I don't know. I'm still open to doing that type of stuff. I would love to. I am a vegan. I'm an animal lover.
You're a vegan?
Yeah, definitely.
You're a vegan?
Many years.
You don't eat meat?
Nope.
How do you survive, bro?
I don't know. I eat a lot of fucking...
Do you have to use a lot of supplements?
I barely supplement. Really? For someone with my lifestyle, dude...
That's incredible. I'm
a terrible routine, to be honest with you. Like, my diet is not usually on point. When it is, and I'm eating, like, you know, whole foods, good plant, literally mostly just closer to fruits, vegetables, beans, seeds, nuts. Like, when I'm eating raw like that, like my energy is great. Yeah. Yeah, like, literally more of, like, a primitive animal diet. And when I'm doing that, I feel great. But I do fucking
my fucking
garbage.
Pets eat better than you, dude.
You could say that. But
well, not
could,
better than you. You're a fucking goddamn elite athlete. You know what I'm just saying?
What I was getting at is I don't have a very strict, honestly, diet or nutrition plan. I never really have. Fucking the only times I've ever tried to track it, I kind of went nuts, like, looking at numbers too much. And
yeah, it'll do that.
But yeah, though, people get me that a lot. Like, what? How? I eat a lot of processed fucking bullshit, too. I do consume a lot of calories. I eat all day long. It can be hard if I let my shit slip. And
that's crazy.
I have vitamins that I should take and stuff more. I drink some protein powder now and then. But yeah, I'm a pretty undisciplined with my diet, to say the least. I like some vegan snacks and sweets and...
Dude, the vegan propagandists should be, like, jumping over each other trying to get a hold of you. You are, like, the best. You would be, like, one of the best spokesmen representation for what, like, a vegan could be. An elite athlete that is a vegan. Like, because that's always, you know, the argument. And you're not even fucking supplementing that much. And that's the key, right? To get the certain kind of protein, the good protein that you need. You know, you need the supplement. And you're doing it, obviously, at the highest level. Fucking without it. So that's incredible, dude. I didn't learn that and didn't even ask the fucking question, bro.
Well, yeah. Now you know, the listeners know. I know there's a lot of annoying vegans, and I know there's probably some sort of agenda to get everybody eating some fake meat, fake whatever. Like, I do it because I believe, I don't know, I just love animals. I always have. I felt guilty contributing to any sort of, you know, torture or death or whatever of an animal. I personally just didn't want to, couldn't participate in that. So that's just... Yeah, my personal thoughts. The other question I have, though, it's kind of related to the one you asked about meeting someone, but maybe you might have a different answer from someone you'd like to spend a day with versus a character you kind of draw influence from or look up to or is your favorite historical figure rather than fictional character. Maybe it's not someone you'd want to be with for a day or just a character you know, respect, look up to.
I would say George Carlin. He was my all-time favorite comedian. I remember, again, it's fucking weird, but a lot of things happened, I guess, looking back now in seventh grade. But my mom, she was a nurse. She would work nights, so she worked the 11 p.m. to 7 a.m. shift, and I was still living at home, obviously. I was in seventh grade. And I was on the couch downstairs watching HBO, and I discovered this old man on stage, and he was... doing comedy, but in a way that I've never seen anybody do comedy before. He was like a philosopher up there. What he was saying was not only fucking hilarious, but it was true. He was saying true things that were hilarious, and it blew my mind. Like, the next day I'm going to school trying to fucking recite his things, you know. It's like, I got to see him live before he died in Las Vegas, and it was totally like by chance, because I was just driving through there in the year 2000 with an old girlfriend who has since passed away, and he happened to be in town for two nights, and we were going through, so got to see him at the old Bally's in Las Vegas in 2000, which was a fucking dream come true. But sorry for rambling. Definitely George Carlin. What about you?
That's legendary. And my answer for this is a legendary figure that I don't think gets enough credit, that I definitely draw a lot of inspiration from, especially within the community we have in the, you know, fighting against the Matrix. And I think there's a reason he's not so popularized, because he was literally taking on the biggest empire power structure of his time, Vercingetorix, the chieftain / king of Gaul, where the Gauls were a Celtic people who inhabited, like, Central Europe. Like, most people would think, like, Celts are just Irish and Scottish and Welsh, but, like, most of Europe was inhabited by Celts. The Roman Empire, Julius Caesar specifically, is who Vercingetorix fought against, because Caesar made it his mission to, you know, like, expand and conquer Gaul and take out these people. And I have plenty of theories that we'll get into in future episodes related to the Gauls and Druids. But, yeah, Vercingetorix united these tribes of Celts, which was always warring with each other, just like basically independent little clans and factions of forest people, Celtic tribes, and he took Caesar to the brink in a legendary battle. Like, Caesar has a whole commentary and like book on the Gallic Wars and like how tough these battles were, and Vercingetorix, the Celtic chieftain who almost defeated the Roman Empire. It's just a legendary story of fighting against the system, and yeah, I fucking love that character. Yeah, he stands for a lot of what I, you know, value.
And that's why we do shit like this, because yep. I would have never, you give me 1,000 guesses, shit, I would have never guessed him.
Vercingetorix, bad motherfucker, sick mustache. All right, so I know we've talked about this before in off air, but this is the perfect chance to ask it because we now have the podcast and a platform for it. And it was, if you were the guest on a podcast, what would be your like main talking point? And I've heard it, but let's let the audience hear it.
It would definitely be that addiction is not a disease. I used to be a heroin addict for 2 months shy of 15 years. Easier just to say 15 years. Been clean for, in February, it'll be 10 years. So when I say clean, I mean from anything besides weed, basically, and mushrooms and psychedelics. But yeah, you know, I mentioned ex-girlfriend is dead. Yeah, it was an overdose. Essentially, anybody, and I'm not exaggerating, everybody that I used with, man, they're gone. Except for one, and he's in prison. So, yeah, man, I'm a felon. It's ruined my life. Spent many nights in jail. Never been to prison. Dodged that bullet. The most time I've ever spent locked up in one run was 9 months. And they wanted to give me on my felony charge, which was the main one was a delivery charge. I sold to an undercover cop 3 times, so they had me dead to rights. But they were trying to give me 10 years. I ended up getting three years of probation, which a lot better than 10 years of prison. It still sucked. Anyway, getting back to it, don't believe it's a disease. I don't believe I can't wake up tomorrow and choose that I have cancer. I believe that gives addicts built-in reasons to fail. It's like, oh, well, okay, I have a disease. Like, that's what all my fucking friends would say. It's like, I have this incurable disease. It's like, really? And it's like in all these rehabs, they tell you, it's like, oh, well, relapse is a part of recovery. Well, it's like, okay, you fucking idiot. You're giving these people a reason to fail. It's like, you're basically saying to this heroin addict or crack addict, hey, man, listen, we know that you're going to use again, but just try not to use as much. So it's like, why are you, how is that even a good approach? You know what I mean? That's what that's saying. Why does it have to be a part of it? Why? Why? Just because most people do means I have to? I never believed addiction was a disease. I don't think you can get better believing that. I really don't. Because you only get better when you start taking responsibility for your actions. Like, I did shitty shit when I was using. I did, you know, and it'd be a lot easier for me to say, well, you know, I was in my addiction, wasn't too good. It would be, trust me, for my conscience, it would be a lot easier for me. But the fact of the matter is, no one made me do that shit. It changed some pathways, some neural pathways of, you know, when you're using and you physically get sick. I'm not arguing that. That's real shit. That doesn't make it a fucking disease, right? I was in rehab once at Cornell Interventions in Woodridge, Illinois. I was a 90-day inpatient many years ago. And I was talking to one of the counselors, and I was getting into this debate with him, and I asked him, I was like, all right, so just assume all I do is smoke cigarettes. That's it. That's all I do, smoke cigarettes. You're telling me, you're telling that guy, he has a disease. You could see, like, in his head, like, he had never thought of this very simple thing before. And it's like, how does a guy that smokes cigarettes, go tell that guy that smokes cigarettes he has a disease because he smokes cigarettes. See what his reaction's going to be. And then he's like, AA is the way. Sure, you know, some people, that works for those people that it works for. Some people need to fill one thing with another thing. And I think the main thing that AA is good for is the support. You know, I had a wife, 2 kids. Dude, supports everything. That makes it fucking 100 times easier. So, but yeah, I mean, I can go on about this. There's a lot of good books. Dr. Mark Lewis wrote, he's a neurosurgeon. He wrote a book called Biology of Desire, where he goes on to talk about like the different changes in the brain and the chemistry and how he could prove via that data that it isn't a fucking disease. And then my personal favorite is Dr. Gaber Mate, who is a Canadian psychologist who has been working with addicts for, I think, his whole life, essentially. And he's got a ton of books, but if I could recommend just one, I believe it's called The Realm of Hungry Ghosts. And he believes that all addiction stems from unresolved childhood trauma. And I tend to agree with him wholeheartedly. He's a fucking brilliant man. Sorry, I rambled on so long.
Do you think that there is a supernatural element to addiction? Because if you realize alcohol, the root word too even comes from al-kul or al-ghul, which meant body-eating spirit. And like they even call it at the liquor stores, like spirits, wine and spirits.
Shit.
And like people kind of act like possessed when they get drunk. So do you think that like addiction has a, you know, spiritual or demonic aspect to it?
Well, you know, I didn't know any of that. And I would say, you know, quote unquote, what is called addiction. I mean, I don't know enough about it to really give you a legitimate answer. I would say no. But what you just told me about the alcohol, I would say there's probably something to that with alcohol, though. I don't know if addiction in general, like some guy smoking crack, I don't know if there's necessarily a connection. But the guy that is drinking every night that beats his fucking family, there's probably something there, right?
Yep.
Yeah, that's awesome, dude.
Yeah. I'm glad I never really got into drinking.
Yeah, me either. That's the thing. It's like, you know, like I never, that's not, never an issue for me. Dude, I got a crazy story that we'll get into one time about when I was locked, not locked up, but I was in that Cornell Interventions and these people snuck out the fucking window to go get booze. Dude, I'll tell you all about it on a different day. It's crazy, bro. Next time we do one of these, I'll tell that story. Remind me.
Definitely.
Guess we'll call it quits.
Yeah. Good short little episode. Fun little questions. Get to know each other. Get the audience acquainted with us. You can tell a lot about a man by his favorite fake character.
One more thing before we go. I'll do a quick rapid fire. Favorite band?
Morbid Angel.
Favorite number?
8.
Favorite color?
Blue.
If you could move to any state, what would it be?
State or place?
State.
Maybe Washington.
Place?
Ireland.
All right, that's it for me.
All right, we're gonna reverse it on you. Color?
Black.
Place you'd go?
In the world?
Yes.
Maybe Switzerland.
State you'd go?
Montana.
Favorite band?
Seven Dust.
Salty or sweet?
I love them both.
Same. I would default on that. I go one or the other.
You go both ways.
Oh shit, dude. I forgot to record this.
The whole thing?
I'm just kidding.
The greatest prison that people live in is the fear of what other people think. What happened to me as a result of all the ridicule I went through is that I stepped out of the fear of what other people thought.